Good morning, everyone. Tim Hortons. Can always tell. Starbucks always yields a slightly higher pitch. Well, I'd like to extend a special thanks to all of those who have worked very hard behind the scenes, and it makes that our Feast of Tabernacles that much more of a pleasurable experience. Someone told me earlier in the feast that there wouldn't be a Feast of Tabernacles if nobody volunteered. I had a dream once that I was speaking at the Feast of Tabernacles and I was wearing my pajamas. Okay, I'm okay. If you have been attending God's church for any period of time, you'll know that you'll have heard the question asked almost invariably on the first day, usually opening night, why are we here? And this year was no exception. It was asked. I'd like to ask a slightly different question. Same question, maybe with a slightly different focus, but I believe it's equally as important. What are we doing here? In other words, now that we're brought here, exactly what are we supposed to do? I'd like you to notice in Exodus 23 in verse 14, it says, three times you shall keep a feast unto me this or in the year. The word for keep can be translated as celebrate. Other translations do render it as celebrate. And the Hebrew word that's used, I'm not going to try to say it. It looks really hard to pronounce, and I might get tongue-tied, and someone would have to carry me off the stage. It wouldn't be very nice, but it has meanings of moving around in a circle, to march in a sacred procession, to observe a festival, to be giddy, to celebrate and dance. In Deuteronomy chapter 16, in verse 15, it's been read a couple of times, or at least once, a couple of days ago. In verse 15, it says that 7 days you shall keep a solemn feast unto the Lord. Now, this keep a solemn feast is that same word. And it does mean to celebrate. So, God commands us to rejoice, to celebrate. And so far, we have heard many great reasons why we should be celebrating. And indeed, there are many reasons why we need to celebrate. This is the time of the year in the Middle East when all the people have gathered up their harvest, all the things that they have worked so hard for during the year. You know, that's why one of the names is the Feast of Ingathering. We finally get a chance to see all the stuff we've worked for, all the stuff that God has blessed us with. We also know that as we look ahead, this is a symbolism of 1,000 years of never before experienced peace, cessation of war and violence, ever since humans have been on the earth. But rather than talking about why we want to celebrate, for the next few minutes, I'd like to focus on some areas on how we should celebrate. So I have three areas we could focus on while we celebrate for the remainder of this feast. Number one, and probably the most important, maybe in Hebrews 10:25, I'll just turn to it quickly, fellowship. Hebrews 10 and verse 25, and I'll start in verse 24. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love, unto agape, and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. And that's what we're doing now. And we're supposed to exhort one another. And another word for exhort is comfort one another and encourage one another. If at all possible, let's try to leave our troubles at home. And since we are commanded to rejoice, and of course there are many, many possible reasons that could hinder any one person's ability to truly rejoice. You know, an illness or a recent tragedy, and you know, most years there usually is, and you know, unfortunately this year's not an exception. There has been a tragedy, but we are commanded to exhort and comfort one another. So you know, let's remember these people, of course. Our demographics have changed as well. I first started coming to church when I was 4 years old, and all the black hairs and blonde hairs and red hairs are mostly gray and white now. The only person who I don't think has changed is Mr. Barrett, who looks the same. He's ageless, I guess. But we are an older bunch, and I do submit that the older we get, the greater reason we actually have to celebrate. You know, perhaps that the physical things in life can sometimes be a deterrent. We do have that hope within us that the spiritual reality becomes that much clearer for us. Always make it a family feast. Back in Deuteronomy 16, verse 15, it tells us that your son, your daughter, should be included. And it's a great opportunity to help us fulfill the work of Elijah in Malachi 4, turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and vice versa. Remember also the less fortunate. If you're blessed, back in Deuteronomy 16 there, it talks about everyone within your gates. And if you have blessed enough to have gates and servants and children, you probably are blessed enough to maybe help the less fortunate. And be inclusive, not exclusive. Now, that verse is really packed with a lot of meaning if you actually look at it. James 1:27 is a scripture that we should meditate on as well. And just because those around us don't even know that the Feast of Tabernacles exists, it doesn't mean they can enjoy the feast as well. A few years ago, some people were enjoying a meal. I believe it was in Kelowna. And at the end of the meal, this one girl lays out a tip that's quite excessive in proportion to what the bill was. And the other diners were saying, "Are you crazy?" And you know what she said? You know, she said, "Just because the waiter or waitress doesn't know that it's the feast, shouldn't stop this person from having a wonderful feast as well." Isn't that a great example of letting our light shine? Number two, I'd like you to read, if you could, Ecclesiastes 3. This is a passage of opposites. There's time for everything, or a season for everything. Verse 2, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to harvest. This is a time to harvest. A time to kill, a time to heal. Verse 4, a time to weep, and a time to laugh. At the end, I'd like to focus on a time to mourn, and the opposite that God inspired Solomon to choose, it's a time to dance. So this is a time to dance, clearly. And throughout the scriptures, there are many references to dancing. When God granted Israel a victory, and when they took or recaptured a city, what did the Israelites do? They usually danced and celebrated before God. In the parable of the prodigal son, when he returned, there was dancing. There's great joy in heaven when a sinner repents. It is natural to dance then when one is happy, and the Feast of Tabernacles is truly one of these times. I'd like to point out, obviously, that there are good and bad examples of dancing in the Bible. When the Israelites were dancing around the golden calf, they happened to be naked, and that's probably not one of the good examples. But at the same time, it's also difficult not to be impeded by our own culture. We tend to be held back by our own tradition, and sometimes rightly so. We don't want to offend. But I would love, and you know, in the days of DVDs and videotape, I would love to see a video of David dancing and leaping after the ark was returned. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, maybe for good reasons God doesn't want to. Because that kind of dancing, I think, suits my style better. I mean, time dancing to music. I have three left feet, and that stresses me out. Don't want to upset my wife. Maybe that's not, I won't wear an ephod. Third point I have, another tool that God has given us. I'd like to turn over, please, if you will, to Ezekiel 28. And the third tool is music, one tool to help us celebrate. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel. It's a lot easier to type in E-Z-E on a computer. Okay, verse 13. This scripture is always used to talk about the fall, or this passage, the fall of Lucifer. But I'd like to focus on something quite different. At the end of the verse, okay, he's talking about creating something in a perfect and beautiful being, and he says the workmanship of your tabrets and all your pipes was prepared in you the day you were created. So this beautiful being then was created with a gift of music. So by implication, at least by implication, we can see here that music was created. And something else I'd like to share with you, like I think in these terms, maybe everyone does, but what is music? What is sound? It's the vibration of air molecules bouncing back and forth, and it eventually reaches our ears, and it's interpreted by our brain, and we hear music. But this happened, this being was created eons of time before the physical earth began. We read Job 38 the other day. So also by implication, music then was created on a spiritual plane. And wouldn't it be wonderful, you know, one day we will be able to understand what God means, what that music would sound like. What a day that is going to be. You know, Mr. Saloma planted a seed in a sermonette that he gave, I think, during Atonement. Or in the fall season, about the Feast of Tabernacles, the first feast in the millennium. You know, you can imagine King David being there, leading music, and, you know, Jim Brandenburg and Richard Comadres and a lot of these good musical personalities. Can you imagine what the music is going to be like? So music, as we plainly see, is a gift created for us. And music is a very powerful gift, and we know the powerful effect that music has. So powerful that it drove away an evil spirit when Dave played before Saul. You've probably experienced firsthand how powerful music can be. If you ever heard music in an elevator, how violent that it can make some people. Music can inspire, can motivate, can make sad, it can stir up anger, and marching music can stir up troops. Just like dancing, of course, there are good and bad kinds of music. And I understand there's this thing that we call musical taste. Everybody has them, and my parents said I don't have any. And it's funny, most parents, you know, they tend to not like the musical tastes of their children. And hopefully we can be inclusive of the, and you know, tolerant of the music that everybody listens to. I think there's only one bad type of music, and that's country. I had to throw that in for a couple of you guys. But it does say in Colossians to put all filthy communication out of your mouth. And you know, there's a lot of great music that, you know, with terrible lyrics, and maybe we get to keep the music and adjust the lyrics in the world tomorrow. That would be really nice. But it is amazing, though, how much music and instruments are mentioned in the Bible, in the scriptures. So let's use this wonderful tool to celebrate and to rejoice. I had to modify my conclusion just slightly based on some of the other messages that we've heard. And we've heard a lot of wonderful messages instructing us that we are here to learn. We are here to be more respectful to our Creator and to become more godlike. And I'm telling you to celebrate and party. Well, this does not contradict in any way. I mean, in our celebrations, we are to become more godlike. And what kind of a Creator actually, in the first place, commands us to have a good time? You know, how great is that? Have a great time. Party it up and remember why. During all this, why we were sent here. Remember what we are doing here. Try to do things that you haven't ordinarily done in the past. Of course, respect others. And I can say that with very deep sincerity. We had a little incident a few days ago where we were being loud and we didn't know it. And some of these older motels have very thin ceilings. So if at all possible, maybe if they're brothers, invite them up, you know, in our inclusiveness. But of course, respect local bylaws and do everything in moderation. You know, alcohol is one thing we haven't even touched on. God created this for us. Everything in moderation and in the confines of God's perfect law. So the Feast of Tabernacles is truly one of these times to fellowship, to dance, and to make a joyful noise.